people say that we live in a global economy, a world village. Well, certainly, at the heart of that village has got to be language. How do we communicate with one another? We're going to talk today to Laurie Stevens, founder of the Chattanooga Language School. Also, at the heart of any business is capital. Every business needs money to survive. Who needs capital? Where do you find capital? When do you need that capital? Frank Williamson, managing partner of Four Bridges Capital, is going to explain it all to us. Today's show is going to be awesome. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Monty Brule, and this is Start It Up. The two most important elements in becoming an international city are language and culture. We've got to be able to understand one another and communicate, and we also have to be able to enjoy one another and appreciate diverse cultures. Our guest today, Laurie Stevens, the founder of the Chattanooga Language School, combines both of those elements. Whether she is teaching an individual a foreign language or she's coaching Chattanooga's police department, she's hard at work spreading her passion for all things foreign language. Hi, Laurie. How are you?
Hi, great. Thank you.
What gave you the idea that in a small community like Chattanooga, a language school could thrive and prosper?
Well, the language school kind of came out of a personal experience I had. I had the opportunity to study abroad in Spain in college, and then when I graduated, I had already fallen in love with the Spanish language and culture and was hooked. And so I found a program abroad in Costa Rica, and I went to a language school there. I lived with a family. I studied hours a day at the language school, but I was immersed in the culture, and it did wonders for my Spanish, and it also kind of transformed me as a person. My time was up there, so I came back home to Chattanooga, where I was born and raised. So I kind of looked at the markets and, you know, is there a room, is there a reason for a language school in Chattanooga? And I found that, yes, there was, and there still is. I started the language school in 2010, and it's been my passion ever since.
Now, when you say you started the language school in 2010, I'm sure there was a process that was involved there. Did you have to raise capital? Did you go out and talk to language teachers and schools? What was the process you went through to get you to opening the doors in 2010?
It has been a process, for sure. So I opened the doors in 2010 very conservatively, just a few students and a couple teachers, using the space of a local nonprofit. And then gradually we grew, gaining more students, gaining more interest, got our own space in St. Elmo, outgrew that space within a year, moved over to the incubator, the business development center where we are. We've been there 2.5 years, going on our third year there. So yeah, we're growing. We have, we're in a lot of local schools, and that's something that I'm super passionate about, is bringing language back into the schools, especially at a young age. So we do classes on site in the Business Development Center for all ages, all proficiency levels, all backgrounds. And then we do classes off site for different organizations, businesses, things like that.
And I know that your background is in Spanish, but how many languages do you offer?
We offer more than 10. You know, with Chattanooga's growing diversity, there was no need to limit just to Spanish. And so we do offer more than 10 different languages, see interest in all of those languages.
Now, I know that you're not just interested in language, you're also interested in culture and increasing our understanding of one another. Can you tell me a little bit about that philosophy?
Absolutely. That's a big part of the language school. I believe that you can't learn a language without learning the culture, and vice versa to me. And so a big part of the way our teachers conduct a class is bringing in a lot of the cultural aspects, whether it's music, art, literature, day-to-day do's and don'ts in the culture. And it's very important for our teachers to provide that for the students, because those two are very connected, culture and language.
You mentioned that you've worked with businesses as well. As Chattanooga has increased in prominence, and as the world economies have become, you know, more and more intertwined, are you seeing increased demand from the business community to learn other languages?
We are. We are actually teaching, for instance, City of Chattanooga employees Spanish. We've been teaching them Spanish for about three different semesters now. We just started a class for City of Chattanooga police officers in Spanish. Also, just other businesses, you know, that if they bring employees in from other countries, sometimes their spouses will need language lessons, or they themselves. We've taught a couple individuals who wanted to improve their English, who wanted to, they were doing a lot of business abroad in different countries and wanted to focus on the languages of those countries. And so we, you know, conducted lessons for them. And so it's a big market for sure, especially like you said, when, you know, Chattanooga is becoming a very big international attraction for people. And I think that's just going to grow.
Now, every business has competition. And when I think of learning a foreign language, the first thing that comes to mind is Rosetta Stone. Mm-hmm. So how would you compare what it is that CSL offers to, say, online learning or Rosetta Stone?
That's a great question. And I just feel like competition helps businesses. And without a doubt, one of our one of the most popular ways of learning a language is Rosetta Stone and other online options that people are able to use in their day-to-day lives. You know, they may not have an opportunity to spend 2 hours a week in a classroom, but that's, to me, a big part of learning a language is the face-to-face, the in-person experience. And our teachers provide a wealth of knowledge in the cultural part of the language and obviously the language itself. We don't isolate those other resources, you know, those are supplementary. They can be of great value. But CSL provides the in-person holistic approach to learning a language.
You've already talked about how rapidly your business grew in the beginning. Every business struggles with marketing and getting new customers. What's your plan for continuing to grow the Chattanooga School of Language?
You know, since we started in 2010 until now, we've seen a change even in those years with our target market. And, you know, I thought it was one thing when we first started, and I've seen that, you know, it kind of changed to a different thing. And who needs language the most? We have different audiences, of course, but, you know, a big part of our plan is to get more involved in the schools. And we provide culture and language camps for kids during the summer. I want to grow that. I want to provide language for as many children as we can, especially because I believe that these kids are going to be our future leaders. If they don't have an awareness of other cultures and languages, how are they going to be competitive in the global marketplace, which Chattanooga is very much headed that way, you know? So I really am trying to get into the schools, whether it's after-school programs. We're in several schools now offering after-school language programs for kids, and the summer camps and that. I want to see CSL become a prominent presence in the community, bringing in people from, you know, all over, but also touching people in this city.
What's one obstacle you've had to overcome in starting CSL and growing your business, and maybe one that you didn't even envision?
That's a good question. I think probably fear that I generated on my own, you know, fear of making mistakes, fear of not knowing, finding the right people to be on your team. But Chattanooga has such a wealth of resources, which I did not know existed until I kind of got my feet wet and was in the midst of it all. I think I've learned to just find those resources and take advantage of what the city has to offer startups. That helped me overcome a lot of fears because I knew I couldn't do it on my own. And I don't think you're supposed to. I think you're supposed to surround yourself with people who are better at things than you are and that love those things that maybe you're not strong at, and surround yourself with a powerful team, and that will make your business grow.
So your message to other entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs is go ahead and try the waters and that there are people out there to help you.
Exactly. Yes, hands down.
So is there one thing that has pleasantly surprised you? I mean, what has made you really smile about the experience of starting CSL?
Every day I love it. I love it more and more. And it doesn't feel like work to me. It's a passion of mine, and I get to meet the coolest people through CSL. People we, you know, we employ as teachers, people we meet as students, people like community partners and stuff who have the most interesting stories and backgrounds. And that's the beauty of it is that, you know, no one's right, no one's wrong. We're just different. And that is really cool. And I think a pleasant surprise has been getting to know all sorts of different people and seeing what they can bring to the table and in different ways. So,
well, maybe one day, Laurie, that you'll be able to work with my bad French and my bad Russian and help me to become a real speaker of a second language.
That's a deal. You have a deal.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Frank Williamson of Four Bridges Capital. Don't go away. I'm Monty Brule, and this is Start It Up.
Support comes from DeCosmo. DeCosmo's CPAs and business advisors have served the financial needs of entrepreneurs since 1971. DeCosmo is a public accounting and business advisory firm with offices throughout the Southeast. Learn more at DeCosmo.com.
Whenever founders get together and talk about their businesses, one of the first things discussed is exit strategy. People ask, what is your exit strategy? What they really mean is, how am I going to cash out and hit the big time and make some money? Well, if you're fortunate enough to reach that point, the person you have to call is an investment banker. And in Chattanooga, the person you're likely to call is Frank Williamson of Four Bridges Capital. Chattanooga is unique among mid-sized southern cities in that we have six, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 fully formed venture capital funds. And they're quite sophisticated. And at the heart of that investment community, you'll find Frank Williamson. Hello, Frank. How are you today?
Monty, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you were able to stop by. So you are an investment banker now. Everyone, you know, has seen the movie Wall Street, so we understand all about investment banking. But how does investment banking in Chattanooga, as opposed to on Wall Street, work?
Well, in Chattanooga and in the South, investment banking is about helping people get private capital. Sometimes that's a bank loan. Sometimes that's a loan from a pension fund or a money manager that's not a bank. Sometimes that's getting investments from a private equity fund. On Wall Street, it's probably mostly about stocks and bonds and public securities. And in most of the world these days, that only applies to Fortune 500 companies. So from Chattanooga, we cover the whole South at Four Bridges, which is the firm where I now work. And we help the owners of businesses who've got, let's say, somewhere between $10 and $100 million of sales get access to capital when they need to grow or refinance a loan or ultimately sell their business.
Most of our listeners will not need an investment banker, but anyone who has thought about starting a business or owns a business now needs capital. It's one of the top things that small business owners talk about. How do I get the capital that I need? Now, I know you through the Company Lab, where you've been on the board and you have served as a mentor. What's it been like working with companies at that level, true startups, and how do those startups begin to address their capital needs?
You know, it's so interesting, Monty. What we find is that the work you need to do is the same, whether you're an entrepreneur out looking for capital to help start a business, or you're an up-and-running business out looking for capital.
Okay.
The sources are different, but the work is just about the same. And the big thing that I think business owners starting out or business owners later on need to realize is getting money for a business is a job. It might be selling and getting revenue in return for the product you sell, or it might be seeking investment and getting money in return for the promise to pay it back in the future. It's almost the same activity, and it takes almost the same amount of time.
Now, I've found that most business owners are overly enamored with their own idea, that they think that their business is super special and all they have to do is tell a prospective investor what their idea is and the money is going to flow their way. What's your experience been?
My experience is that it's helpful for business owners to think about investors as business people too. So in the same way that you or I running our business has to go out and talk with a lot of potential customers to find one for whom we really solve a problem, mm-hmm. we really address their needs.
Right.
When you go talk with an investor, it's wise for you to consider that they've got a problem to solve, which is getting a return on their money. And like anybody else who's got a problem, they're going to look at lots of different ways to solve it. So when you go out and talk with an investor about your idea, it's going to help to keep in mind that person's got 25 potential solutions to his problem of where do I get a return.
Right.
Including just invest in the stock market. And so when you know that, you probably pitch with the idea you've got to beat the stock market or a bank account or something like that. And maybe you can win. But just like selling any other thing that your business is selling, you're up against some competition.
Now, you mentioned the word pitch. That's a word that brings fear and terror to most business owners because they know what they do, but standing in front of a room and asking somebody for money or convincing them to give them money is a totally foreign activity. You were the pitch coach for Gig Tank this year, so you had to listen to a lot of pitches. Tell me about the process that you went through in terms of coaching, and how do most people need to improve their pitches?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, it's a skill, and it is selling. A great pitch is one in which someone, number one, knows they're selling.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, understands what the product is that they're selling, which is the potential return on money for it being invested.
Right.
And number three, they've been thoughtful about where do they want to be different from what that investor has probably heard from other people. So it's just like your product. If you're going to have a service that's different from other services we could buy, that difference better be distinctive.
Right.
And ought to be what you're trying to get across. And when you go out and you sell your magazine that you've published, you generally have a pretty good idea of what other magazines look like.
Right.
You know, what the competition is. And the decisions you've made about the design of your magazine reflect something about how you want it to be different. It is worth it for anyone making a pitch about an investment in their company to know what other pitches look like. What are the basic things for, you know, that an investor needs to understand and to have made a conscious decision about where to be different so that they are distinctive?
Mm-hmm. Lucy Beard, the CEO of Feats, who has been on our show, is one of the best pitchers I have ever heard. She is incredible. Now, without revealing any identities, can you tell us maybe about one of the worst pitches you've ever heard?
Oh, my goodness. Well, there are two things that make for a terrible pitch. One, and probably in the case of the worst one I've ever heard, I got all the way to the end of the pitch, and I had no idea what the company did. There was a lot of vision. There was a lot of change the world, but I couldn't figure out how. And I couldn't figure out concretely versus what other idea out there. And so I'd say, first of all, be concrete, be specific, describe what you're doing. And that's a pitch that was just extraordinarily disappointing. You know, what unfortunately happens a lot are the pitches that are just not compelling.
Right.
And so, you know, instead of it being perhaps the memorably worst pitch, it's just the dullest pitch you've ever heard because it never really said much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd encourage people to avoid that too, to be, you know, avoid being cute or being vague. And in the CoLab practices for the gig tank, I gave people an 8-point outline. And I said to them, first of all, just follow the outline.
Right.
And after you've nailed the outline, then go decide what you're going to do to be different. But just like those magazines that, you know, you'd compare before you came out with yours, at least know what a magazine looks like. Make the binding work, make the table of contents work, make the ads and the articles work. And when you can do that really well, then you can go off and make something different.
After the break, there's more with investment banker Frank Williamson. I'm Monty Brule, and you're listening to Start It Up.
Support comes from Rapid RMS, developing custom point-of-sale systems for retailers, restaurants, and direct sales organizations. Rapid RMS provides iPad and cloud-based solutions, including robust inventory management and reporting. Learn more at rapidrms.com. Support comes from Click, Click, Boom, designing mobile marketing and customer loyalty programs for businesses, nonprofits, and universities. Learn more at clickclickboommobile.com.
Most founders are not accountants, and they are afraid of the numbers. And the part that gives people the most concern when they're meeting with a prospective investor is a discussion about the financials. How can a founder who is great at what he or she does but doesn't really understand finance meet with a prospective investor, and how can they make that meeting successful? What do they have to know?
That's a super question. So number one, at the stage that you're a new business looking for funding, so long before Four Bridges, for example, could be helpful.
Right.
An investor is investing in you personally. There'll be some range of what your business is worth. It's a rule of thumb, but there's no math. It's about like it being a hiring decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd encourage people, don't get too hung up about the numbers, especially if there aren't any yet. Do get hung up about what's the market? Is it worth spending time in? Is it big enough? Can you convince a couple of early customers that you're doing something really valuable and get to the point that you can cover your costs quickly? And why are you the right person, or why do you have the right team to deliver that? The numbers will come together.
Now, you mentioned talking to a few early customers. How important is it at the very beginning, even before you've gone to market officially, to go out and get input from prospective customers?
It's incredibly important. Input from prospective customers is, of course, what a business is all about. You know, and ultimately, the input is, did you buy my product?
Right.
And you don't have anything for someone to invest in if you didn't. And so I think that maybe there are two things for people to keep in mind. One is, a customer proves the concept. So it's only real when someone's bought it. And two, when it comes to thinking about investment and to the idea that all money is hard to get, by far, the cheapest capital is revenue.
Right.
And so if you want to get money to the bottom line and you want to get money to pay yourself and pay other people, getting it from your customers is the place where you can find someone really invested in your business.
That makes a lot of sense. In the process of raising capital, a business owner is going to be told no probably more than a few times. What is it that's important to learn from being told no? And how do you move on to the next investor so that you're likely to get a yes?
Monty, that's a great question. Let's see. First thing to learn is no is not a criticism. And so a rule of thumb that we give people looking for capital in general, even mature companies, and it applies to startups as well, is assume that an investor is looking at 100 opportunities for every one they close. So the chances of yes are minuscule. The next thing is that a meeting doesn't need to be just about getting money. Because people are seeing 100 opportunities for every one, investors have a pretty interesting perspective on businesses. And so I'd encourage people who are out asking for money to consider it a successful meeting if they got a clear yes, obviously, a clear no, because that'll save them time in the long run, or a lesson to take away for the next time.
Okay.
All of those are successes. And I think maybe that'll help people keep their spirits up too, because you're going to have to do it a lot of times.
You've got to have a really thick skin.
Yep. And you'll earn a thicker skin while you're at it.
Now, several people who have come to Chattanooga to speak or to participate in events have made the comment that there's a lot of great stuff going on in Chattanooga, but one of the things that we need to do is increase the size of our venture capital pool here, that there's not enough angel investment, there's not enough venture capital here. What are your thoughts about that, and do you agree or disagree, and how do we reach that optimum venture size?
You know, Monty, that is such a good point, but one I think has become dated. I think 5 years ago, that was a really fair point to say about Chattanooga and other places.
Uh-huh.
Today, in my observation, and my partners and I drive the Southeast covering companies in a lot of cities like Chattanooga. We spend time in Birmingham and Greenville, South Carolina, in Memphis, Louisville. Chattanooga is the envy of the region. It has got a better community of venture capital that is broadly focused on what's happening in this area. It's got a track record of some exits that not everywhere does. And it has got more than one stop to make, which is important. And equally, a community of investors that talk to one another, which at the same time is also important. So Chattanooga is resource-rich when it comes to smart, experienced, early-stage investors. If you're thinking about doing this somewhere in the Southeast, this is as good a place as any.
Awesome. So before you go, Frank, what is the one lesson or the one gem that you wish all startup entrepreneurs could know? If you could tell them just one thing, what would that one thing be?
Here's a super important thing to keep in mind as the owner, founder, manager of a startup. Funding a business is a job. It doesn't matter if it's getting that money from a customer or getting that money from an investor. It is a huge job. It takes the same skills, and it's not a distraction from the business. It's a choice of how you spend time, but you're going to need money to make a business go.
Absolutely.
And you can choose to put your time into getting it from customers or getting it from investors or other places, but it will take time. And just realize it, be patient with it, and work hard at it.
Frank, thank you so much for stopping by.
Monty, thanks again. I feel really honored to be here.
Hope you'll come on the show again.
Thanks.
Today's show makes me remember that every year, as one of my New Year's resolutions, I say that I'm going to perfect the bad French that I normally speak. Maybe this New Year's will be the year that I do that. Well, I have a bit of news. Like any good grizzly bear, we're going to go on winter hibernation. We're going to take a little 3-week break, and our next show will be Friday, January the 9th. So go into your cave, find a warm spot, curl up, take a snooze, and we'll see you back here on January the 9th. You've been listening to Start It Up, and I'm your host, Monty Bruhl. Start It Up is a production of Be a Grizzly Media. Our executive producer is Suzanne Burnham. And remember, if you're gonna be a bear, be a grizzly. Come on.
We will respond to your questions, so follow us on Twitter at StartItUpGuru. Visit our website, startitup.guru, for more information.